that pretty much ended the tour. As we were leaving, Ed was telling us how he had previously quit, but he missed working in the slaughterhouse so much that he had come back. He said he never wanted to do anything else ever again. I don't think he was kidding. Fortunately, there wasn't too much gore on my shoes when we left, and the dry cleaners completely got the smell out of my suit, so it's only my mind that remains polluted by the slaughterhouse tour. And I have a very short article to read to you, to attach to the end of that one. It's actually most of the front page of a website called MedWasteConference.com. The website, medwasteconference.com. Let me just read this to you. It's just a few short paragraphs, and then I'm going to see if I can get Jerry up here. He either worked in or worked with people who worked in a chicken processing plant when he was a kid, and I'd like to get him up here on the mic to talk about that. If he doesn't want to, I'm not going to force him to it. I'm just mentioning it because I think it would be cool at this point. So Medical Waste Conference, May 7 and 8, 2008. That's this coming year, 2008. McCormick Place, Chicago, Illinois. The Medical Waste Institute's annual Medical Waste Conference is an industry-recognized educational event that focuses on the largest regulatory, legislative, and technical issues that affect the medical waste business. Our members include companies that transport and or treat and dispose of hospital, medical, infectious, chemotherapeutic, and pathological wastes. Companies that make products, treatment technologies, and other equipment for the medical waste market. Companies that provide consulting, engineering, and legal services to the medical waste and healthcare industry. Environmental service and facility managers whose job functions involve the handling of medical waste. Each year, the medical waste industry's most powerful leaders gather to learn, network, and have lots of fun. You should be among them. Doesn't it sound like great fun? But, you know, it's all the way in Chicago, and it probably costs thousands of dollars. Jerry heard me talking. Jerry's fixing the computer downstairs. He's always working on something, doing the billing and taking care of all this computer-related material. You want to pull that up? Yeah, let me just turn your microphone on. And
Test, level test.
That's real good. Check. That's real good. You don't hear anything in your headphones?
I don't have a level in my headphones.
Well, plug it into the headphone jack. Give you a chance to do that. Can you hear that?
No.
Well, hold on a second. Let me give you another pair of headphones. You people at home, just bear with me here. This can be a your ad here moment.
Go try this. Okay, got it. Somewhat.
Okay, so how old were you when you did you actually work in the chicken processing plant?
I worked in the chicken processing plant. Let's get a little more.
How old were you?
Trying to think. It was probably, well, it was right in the middle of college, so I think it was probably when I was around 19, 20.
How long did you work there?
Oh, about a year at most.
Was it good money? Was it as horrible as you might imagine?
In the economy of the area, it was good money, actually, but you know, when you're in college to go for a professional career, it is bad money.
It's
not much, you know. But, you know, I hadn't had a professional job at that point, so there's no frame of reference. And
was it a big plant?
It is a big plant, and it was the primary industry in the town that I grew up in. So this was the live slaughter component. We also had a different plant, different manufacturing company altogether that manufactured breaded cutlet-type things for restaurants. And so that was a totally different kind of.
Where did the chickens come from, and how did they come into the factory?
The chickens came from all over the valley. They are grown in these huge chicken houses that are about 2 football fields long. They're usually 2 stories. And they're full of just millions of birds. And so they grow those on some special.
Literally millions of birds.
Literally millions of birds.
Okay, and they have them in, I understand, little cages so they can't turn around, and they cut their beaks off so they can't peck each other?
No, they're running around all over the place.
Oh, these are free-range chickens.
Well, they're free-ranging inside a room.
For a little bit.
And at certain times of the day, you know, the louvers open and let air in, or they would suffocate. And at night, it closes down to keep them warm.
Breathe up all the air.
So
they didn't burn their beaks off so that they couldn't peck each other?
Well, that happens actually when they're peeps in the hatchery.
Oh, that's before this.
And
how do they eat if they don't have noses?
Well, that's not a problem. It's so that they don't peck each other. And the really the nastiest thing I can ever remember about a chicken house, other than the smell, if you're not accustomed to it, is having one chicken in there with an injury. And as soon as any chicken smells blood, they go for it.
Oh, and then they kill it.
And so they'll peck. They'll peck at this.
Why do they do it?
They're carnivores. They're just evil.
Chickens are. I thought chickens were grain eaters. I didn't know chickens were. They would eat.
They will peck.
Right, because chicken. In the article I just read, they sell this. You know, the meat that is too sick to even use to make hot dogs and bologna out of for chicken feed.
Well, we'll get to that if you want.
get to that.
So then they come in at night and they have a catching crew. And when you work in a chicken plant, you can always tell when the catchers arrive because the odor kind of precedes them. As soon as they go to open the door, it just fills the whole plant. And this is a slaughterhouse, so you know you have blood and blood bacteria smell in the slaughterhouse. So to when the ammonia from chicken manure comes in, you know that the catchers are there and that, you know,
they've opened the door.
Here comes a new batch. So then you have the people that are hanging the live chickens. They hang the live chickens upside down and it's a shackle on a conveyor, you know, line that's overhead. So they're standing up on a platform grabbing chickens out of these cages that are, they're called coops. And
attaching them to something?
And they hang them upside down in, you know, by putting their feet through these things, and then it's like, you know, ankle, it's like an ankle restrictor.
Are they alive at this point?
They're alive at this point, and they're flopping, and there's feathers everywhere.
Hanging upside down by their
hanging upside down.
Handcuffs around their feet.
So then they go, you know, the conveyor line is constantly moving very fast.
How fast?
It's hard for me to remember, but something
like walking speed?
No, something on the order of 1,600 chickens per minute.
So fast running
per
speed?
Per hour.
Oh, 1,600.
I don't remember the rate. It is so fast.
So does it seem like fast running speed or walking speed?
Every task in the place usually has eight people doing it, and you catch every eighth one.
Uh-huh.
So that's how fast the line is actually moving.
Do you have a special tool in your hand?
And so, no, these people that are hanging, they just have gloves on. And usually since they're outside where they're bringing, you know, they're bringing the birds in from the trucks.
Uh-huh. And the chickens are all alive at this point. And
they're in these cages.
And they have all their feathers.
So they're hanging upside down now.
And shooting along on a conveyor belt.
Shooting along
down.
On a conveyor belt, you know, squawking. And then they go into this, it's kind of like a tray of water, you know, and it drags their head through it. And they get shocked in there. And it they go stiff and stop flopping at that point.
Does that kill them?
And right after they hit that, then they're shocked. Well, the shock knocks them out. But then just as they come out of that, their neck is slit.
Slit or chopped off?
It's slit.
A machine does this or a person does it?
A machine does it.
Oh.
And then, you know, a little further up, it will be cut off and then drop into a bin and go for
chicken
feed.
So they're stunned with electricity and their throats are cut open and they bleed to death.
Right. And then they immediately go into these things that have these varying sizes of rubber fingers. And it's the pluckers, and the pluckers are, it's this, imagine a drum with just hundreds of rubber fingers on it, and there's like
it's
six
like
or seven of
car
these.
Car wash for chickens.
It's like car wash for chickens, except, you know, these things are beating the feathers off. And so if you stand at where they come out, you can get like a big old pile of chicken feathers and hot water flopped into your face as, you know, every now and then. Stuff gums up on these
and then sprays in all directions by centrifugal force. Okay, I see that.
So then they come out of there and you've got this, you know, hot, practically still, you know, live chicken, but at this point it's, you know, the blood's draining, and then they have to be transferred. They get washed and steamed, you know, they're steamed and washed, and then they get transferred.
While they're still attached to this thing?
Yeah.
Okay, so they never get cut loose from that until it's...
Then they get transferred. And you have people working what's called the transfer line. So just like anything on an assembly line, you know, they hit a certain point and it hits a little relay. All of these shackles have a device up at the top so that when a solenoid hits it, it goes tunk, and the chicken just drops right off of it.
Okay, onto a belt.
Onto maybe. A belt. And then you have people that are, you know, clean, hanging this onto a second line. Now that line is where it goes into the slaughterhouse. And they keep those two lines separate to keep the fecal matter separate.
The fecal matter?
Fecal matter. Which any fecal matter touches a bird, it has to be discarded once it goes into the clean line.
You mean that comes out and gets back on it?
Right.
But what about the fecal matter that's still inside the bird at this point?
Okay, well, hold on. We'll get to that.
Okay.
So the people on the transfer line are
I knew this would be a good idea because you know all about this. So go ahead.
The people are on the transfer line are hanging these birds. Now, I think, if I remember correctly, the rate here was 120 birds a minute. Because I remember 60 is like that's number that two people have to deal with.
Two birds a second whipping by your eyes.
Yeah, but they always had eight people doing that. So it was fast. It was really fast. And so the birds go in, and then it goes into this machine. It's the most bizarre machine in the whole place. And what it does is it has a vacuum, and it has a curette, a stainless steel curette that comes down and like basically vacuums onto the butt end of the chicken, and then the curette turns and cuts
and sticks in.
Right. Well, it's, you know, because of the vacuum, you know, as soon as it turns, you know, that flesh is going to, you know, around its butt is going to cut and then pull upward. And as it's doing that, and then the curette starts going up, this is a round machine. So it's doing this to every chicken. It's like, you know.
One after another and sucking out their insides?
It's pulling it up. So now you have a cut opening into the rear end of the chicken. And then these two stainless steel kind of finger things come down in. This is a very, very well-designed machine. And it's very specific. And it grabs the lungs and the innards and it pulls them out. And makes them flop over to the side, and they're attached by the esophagus. So you have basically the whole innards of the chicken are removed by this one machine, and it's just like
it
this just daisy wheel round thing.
And then it's...
It's
still attached, but it's out. It turns the chicken inside out.
No, it doesn't turn the chicken inside out.
It pulls the innards out. Okay, and where do they
and
go?
It's just like reaching in with your hands.
Where do they go?
Right now, they're just hanging on the side of the chicken. And so then it goes further down the line. There's an inspection that happens after that point because if the gallbladder bursts, that bird has to be discarded.
The gallbladder?
The actual bile, if it touches the meat, will destroy the meat.
Destroy it?
It starts, you know, digesting it.
Oh, right,
so,
of course.
So, and it's real obvious when one of those bursts because it, you know, it's green and the fluid is so different color from anything. It's really obvious.
Do they use the innards of the chickens? Do they use the heart and, you know, do they sell chicken gizzards? Or?
We're getting to that.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm impatient because it's...
So then now it goes down further to the line and it comes to one of the jobs that I actually kind of like doing, and that's hearts and livers.
Hearts and livers.
And they, in your right hand, you have a pair of scissors, and, you know, birds are coming, flying at you. And you really, once they start the line, you know, you're going to be doing that for hour, you know, 2 hours, let's say. And time is just going to disappear because you have to focus on what you're doing. But there's a way that when those, you look ahead at the bird coming at you, and you grab the whole trail of innards down the side of it, and there's a certain way that you hold it in your hand, and it causes the heart to come out one side and the liver out the other, and you snip the heart and drop it down into a trough that has running water in it, and everyone has two little troughs underneath of their work area. You drop the heart in one, the liver in the other. Reach over, grab the next bird, do the same thing. Keep doing that, just constant. Just
did you
boom,
ever
boom,
cut
boom.
Yourself with the scissors?
Not,
I can see you putting one hand in the other, and one of the hands has scissors in it.
No, not on that line.
Did people do that? Did people hurt themselves?
People hurt themselves all the time in that place.
And what do they do? They stop the whole line because somebody cut his finger off?
It depends upon the severity of it. But we'll keep going down the line. Basically, once the innards are pulled out, you get the gizzard, the heart, and the liver, or what is kept. Then the rest of it is discarded, and that goes with the heads and the feathers and the blood and is used to make chicken feed. So that's how we end up with that re-entering the food stream. You know, that's how we end up with these diseases that enter the food stream is because they use the waste
because
products.
The next chickens are eating what you throw away when you cut open the first chicken.
Exactly. And so basically now you've hit the end of the line for the warm, you know, bird that's still warm.
I was worried about that. I was thinking about, you know, if it had been refrigerated by this point, your fingers would be numb from trying to do this, and it would be terrible. It would be a nightmare.
Actually, to do hearts and livers, you can't wear gloves. That would cause you to cut your finger. You have to be able to see where your fingers are when you're cutting entrails.
And the guts and everything, they're all, you know, bird temperature at this point.
Very much so.
So warm and slimy and et cetera.
It's pretty knacky kind of work. And it has its own particular odor to it.
Okay, next on the line.
And so it hits the end of the live line, and then they drop them into what's called a chiller. And the chiller is this big, humongous, long trough that takes about 40 minutes for the bird to traverse from one end to the other. And it's a big trough, and it just is ice and water, and it's agitated back and forth, and the birds slowly move up this trough.
Agitated back and forth. I see.
And
it's like a washing machine going.
It's not unlike half of a washing machine tub turned on its side and made, you know, 400, 500 feet long.
So
now
the water and the ice, that's all refrigerated, and so
it's very cold in there. No salt.
Okay.
But it's bloody water, and there's fat on the floating on the top, you know. It's really just kind of bizarre. But the point of that part of it is, and why they want to get it so quickly from slaughtered into that cold water with ice, is that the actual flesh will start to take on water weight. And so that's how they actually get the birds to weigh more, so that the water that they lose during shipping isn't coming from the actual original bird weight. So there's this, you know, there a little bit of padding of the weight of the chicken through the slaughtering process. It's just the way it happens.
Okay.
So then they come out of the other end, and you have yet another bunch of people. But now everyone from this point on is wearing kind of like kitchen gloves, but inside you have a pair of cotton liners to keep your hands warm, because you're working with ice-cold meat at this point. And if it's just going to be boxed up to be shipped out to... it's all sorted by weight at this point, so they hang it on yet another set of shackles, and it goes on the line, and it's running. And this line is a little bit different. It actually has a thing that weighs each shackle so that the weight of each bird is known. And then you can statistically say, you know, I want birds, you know, that fall between this weight and this weight to fall, you know, from this line,
go off in that direction.
On this drop.
Yeah,
and then,
I see that.
You know, so they have boxes there, so they can either be dropping them in boxes. But I worked on what was called the saw line. And we would actually, we were the highest precedence because we were making the most money. We were cutting the chickens up into pieces to sell to Kentucky Fried Chicken and restaurants, Marriott, and things like that. So in our line, you know, we had yet another automated hydraulic piece of equipment, which made the rest of the plant look like technologically 50 years before. It's quite an amazing machine in the way that it manipulates the parts of the bird to expose certain joints, and then you have a hydraulic saw will cut it. And all of this happens, and
so
the pieces fall.
Do you operate the machine, or the machine does it itself?
The machine pretty much does it itself, but you have to have certain people monitoring certain tasks. Like when they cut the keel, which is a special cut of the very tip of the breast, you have to have someone there making sure that the breast goes under a bar, because if the chickens are a little too stiff, you might end up having it not want to work on that machine very well. Sometimes when the weights on the main line weren't of the proper statistical value to get you the weight for what you were shipping out and needed to cut your pieces for, you would have to go into the freezer, and we had these big, huge stainless steel tubs that would hold probably about 2 tons worth of chicken.
A big stainless steel tub that would
with
hold...
wheels.
With and, wheels that would hold 2 tons of chicken guts and meat. And
well, meat, usually. It's
basically
stainless steel.
And so you'd fill this up with the rejects from the machine.
Well, so that those tubs, when let's say, for example, the saw line was shut down, or for some other reason, let's say 2.5-pound chickens were in this last batch, but, you know, they are too many coming through to fill the order, so they'll just fill one of these big, huge things, ice it over, put plastic on top of it, and put it in the big, huge walk-in fridge. And that's inventory for you to use later on in the night when you can't get your statistical weight, and you add that to keep your line
working. So the factory runs 24 hours a day, even when trucks full of chickens aren't coming.
The factory actually only ran 18 hours of the day. There's another 6 hours where the whole factory every day is scrubbed and steam cleaned from beginning to end. And those people were the ones that made the most money.
I wonder why.
It's hard work. You have to basically be able to tear down and rebuild every part of the plant and have it up and operational.
And not get your arm stuck in anything.
And not get your arm stuck in it. On the saw line, I was the guy that would make sure that the saw line never stopped. I was the one going and saying, okay, well, it looks like we're not hitting our average here. So I'd run and grab a couple of tons of chicken and roll it in and start throwing them on that belt and keeping people busy.
Those chicken nugget things aren't really chicken meat. They're kind of made with corn, and they're, where does that meat come from?
Okay, now, we had a different line that actually just did parts. They would, you know, create leg quarters, specialized, you know, split breasts. And it's something that wasn't specifically for Kentucky Fried Chicken because they have a certain set of requirements that they want. Whereas if you want to sell parts of chickens, typically you take the ones that had, for example, you know, a leg that was broken and it would not meet quality standards for a Kentucky Fried Chicken cut. You would toss that over into the line that would go into, what did we call that room? It was a room off on its own. But those machines were a little bit more primitive in how they worked. They would just kind of like rip the leg off of the back, the leg quarter off of the back. It was just the way the machine worked. And, you know, it ran faster than the saw line, but it was less accurate in how it operated. And because it was kind of rough and a little bit faster, you would have all these, like, chunks of meat would fly out and stick to the conveyor belt. Well, at the end of the conveyor belt, they had a little thing that would scrape it constantly. And by the end of the shift, you've got, like, you know, 400 pounds of just, like, little meat goo.
Okay, I got it. And this room and that tub aren't refrigerated, isn't that so?
It's pretty cold in there.
It's cold in there.
It's pretty cold in there because, you know, you have all the
so everybody
the ice
in there has like an anorak on, you know, and goggles and breathing through a tube.
Well, no, they're not breathing through a tube, but and they're, you know, you have lights, ultraviolet lights all around the room.
To kill any exposed areas, germs.
Right. And no flies. You never see a fly in that place.
Did
at
people
all
in there have to wear sunglasses because of the UV?
No, never thought of that.
Well,
but we had tons of safety kind of concerns. You had to wear a smock. Everyone had a smock that they had to wear over their clothes. Typically, because I worked in and out of the chiller, I had like 3 or 4 layers on.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning. You're tuned to KMFB in Mendocino. I just have to say that every once in a while. So go on.
And when we would come in for our shift, we had these pieces of plastic to cover those big 2-ton, you know, bins that we would roll around and use to store ice and chicken in. And so the first thing I would do was walk up to that big, huge roll of plastic and grab a piece and then just turn around and cover myself with a, you know, a plastic dress from like, you know, chest mid-chest all the way down.
Oh, so you made your own protection because what they gave you wasn't good enough.
Well, I knew that I was going to be working in a much wetter environment. And so anybody who worked in the wettest environments where water would be spraying or anything like that would tend to have to wrap themselves in plastic. So you've got this plastic smock on, or this white smock, and then you've got plastic wrapped around you. You've got on gloves, you know, double layer of gloves, and and everyone's wearing, oh, and, you know, and I have facial hair, so, you know, I had to wear a beard protector. So,
a beard protector?
So that...
You didn't just do that with more plastic wrap?
No.
Because well, you can't cover over your mouth and nose, it doesn't work right.
So it's this bizarre little thing with, it's like, you have a hairnet on. But you also have these little elastic bits that go over your ears and around the back of your head, and then it's like a little sack, and you stuff your beard into it.
So
all of the men with facial hair are running around this place with this, and they were different color than the hair, you know, the hairnet thing. So you had this white one on your head, and you had this blue thing on your beard, you know. And it's so funny, all these guys running around with these big blue bags underneath of their face.
They could chew tobacco in there if they wanted to.
And let's see. Oh, smock color was very important. The red smocks were for the supervisors, and quality assurance people wore blue smocks.
If you were caught wearing the wrong colored smock, I imagine they'd take you out and, you know, whack your knuckles with a piece of stick or something.
Or fire you.
Or fire you.
And quality assurance would
Did anybody ever get in and like, videotape any of this process going on in order to, you know, do, like, a PETA thing in South Park?
Oh, no, they'd never make it in. That's our industry in our hometown, you know.
They'd never make it in.
They'd turn down the road. There'd be people blocking them on the way in.
With guns.
Well, no, they'd just tell them they needed to go away.
You know? There's a notable paucity of videos of the inside of slaughterhouse places.
Well, when I was growing up, there was a film. They made a film about my hometown.
Huh.
Was it Time Life or one of those people? And it was something about Moorfield, West Virginia. I can't even remember the name. It was 8mm. I saw it at the library. And I would almost swear that there's a chunk in there about the chicken processing and showing the actual process in place.
Okay, so I did pigs, and you did chickens,
I'll go back to doing the station's work at this point.
Okay, well, thanks, Jerry. That was delightful. It was almost as though I was there myself. You made it so clear and described it so well.
The one thing that you can never actually imagine is the odor.
Was what I was going to ask you. How long did you have to be away from working at that place before you didn't smell chicken on everything? Chicken dead, and chicken shit, and chicken blood.
It's an odor that's indescribable. And actually, Mom made it very clear to me that, you know, you leave your boots and your clothes outside in the morning when you come in. So
in the morning, because you worked all night.
I was on the graveyard shift.
Wow. How many billions of chickens do Americans go through every year? Do you have any idea? I'll have to do some research on that.
It's almost like every person is eating two chickens per day.
And
or
we're
something.
Eating
it's
chickens. We're eating chickens that subsisted. A great deal of their subsistence came from chickens that were killed before them.
Right.
The guts of chickens. So they're concentrating the essence of their enemies and attaining their attributes.
Well, maybe not.
The bravery and...
but the one thing on the saw line that we actually did use the... we used scissors for, which was very similar to doing hearts and livers. We would have to remove what's called the leaf fat, which is the fat that's right up inside the flaps of the rear end of the chicken.
Leaf fat?
Leaf fat.
Why was it called leaf fat?
Because it's flat like a leaf.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so you reach in and you grab the side of the chicken and just pull back, and it'll come out right in your hand. And you turn it over and do the same. And then you turn the chicken over and let it go further down the belt. And there's someone there with scissors. Now I have a pair of these scissors, and they are yet to go dull. And this was 20 years ago.
They're special scissors.
They're special scissors.
These are chicken scissors.
You cut the tails off of them for Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Tail-cutting chicken scissors.
You have to cut.
Yep.
You got to cut the tail off the bird there.
Because they don't take it. They don't want that part.
And
that's the Pope's nose there. That's what they used to call it.
Those, the chicken fat and the tails were packaged up in these special little smaller 40-pound boxes and plastic wrapped and shipped off to China.
What did they do with them in China?
They render the fat out of the chicken fat, and you know, chicken fat tastes good.
Oh, and they make then, all of that broth that you get in the dollar store, and the cans of broth, 3 cans for $1. That's where that comes from.
Exactly,
it gets travels all over the world to get to where it is.
Okay.
Thanks for stopping by, Jerry. Good luck with your. Good luck with the rest of your project. I wouldn't want to work in a place like that, but apparently it isn't as bad as I imagine it might be. I as a matter of fact, it sounds fine for somebody else, not me. So a little music maybe, and then I'll come back with some science and science fiction.